Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, your host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is April the 4th, 2024. It has been 3,720 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 42 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 41 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Wednesday and Thursday morning. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. There are map updates today. The Russia-Ukraine war report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, Operational Commands North, South and East of Ukraine, Open Source Intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian male bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission, the truth, because the truth matters. Here is my daily assessment. 1. Our previous assessment that the Russian winter offensive has culminated was inaccurate, with Russia likely entering an extended operational pause in the second half of March. 2. In our assessment, Russia is setting conditions in three operational areas for future wider attacks, but we continue to question how much combat potential will be available to expand current operations. 3. Since the 22nd of March, Russia has violated Article 56 of the Geneva Conventions, intentional targeting of works and installations containing dangerous forces, 6 times, with only one incident acknowledged by the international community. In our assessment, the willful ignoring of blatant Russian war crimes by international watchdogs is only promoting further aggression. 4. Russia's campaign to destroy Ukraine's energy infrastructure has had a significant economic and social impact, and risks increasing world grain prices and contributing to acute food shortages in Africa due to disruptions at Odessa region ports. 5. The disjointed response to Russian aggression by Ukraine's allies continues to embolden Moscow, leading to the most serious airspace violation of a NATO country since Russia expanded its war of aggression on February 24, 2022. We maintain that the inaction by the United States and the excessively risk-averse rules of engagement forced on the NATO alliance are creating an environment ripe for a serious international incident. 6. In our assessment, United States military aid to Ukraine has ended through January 2025, unless there is an unexpected change in political leadership. 7. The continued attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure have incrementally increased the chance of an intentional nuclear accident at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, and the situation at the facility is more serious than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. We start today's report in Kharkiv and Luhansk oblasts, where the situation remains relatively calm in the Kupiansk area of operation, or AO. The Russian Ministry of Defense, Armod, reported that Ukrainian forces launched attacks out of the Sinkivka area with no change in the situation. Russia bombed the settlement of Merefa, southwest of Kharkiv, striking a civilian enterprise. One woman was wounded. Overnight, up to 20 Shahed 136 one-way drones attacked the Kharkiv region. At least one struck a 14-story apartment building, severely damaging the top four floors. After emergency services workers responded, a second drone struck the area in a double-tap attack. The moment of the second drone strike, clearly targeting police and firefighters, was caught on camera, and we'll link to the video in our situation report. There is more information in the podcast description. 4 people were killed, including 3 first responders, and 12 were wounded. A 5th person was killed in a 3rd drone strike, and another drone targeted an electrical substation that had received partial repairs, knocking out power. Shahed-136 one-way drones also struck the Lozova and Zmeyev rayons. NASA Fire Information for Resource Management Systems indicated that the switchyard and transformer farm of the Zmivska thermal power plant were damaged in the attack and are on fire. A Russian missile strike on the 22nd of March had already destroyed all generating capacity. The main Defense Intelligence Directorate of the Ministry of Defense of Ukraine, OHUR, dismissed claims that Russia is preparing to launch a major offensive to capture the city of Kharkiv. Quote, "The defense forces do not record the formation of enemy strikes groups for repeated attacks on Ukraine. In military intelligence, they say that the enemy is trying to sow panic in our country with rumors about an offensive on Kharkiv." Quick assessment. We concur. Russian activity in this area is meant to lock Ukrainian resources in place. In the Svatovo of Luhansk Oblast, Russian forces probed Ukrainian defenses east of Andriivka and returned to their defensive positions. In the Kriminaio, Russian forces launched another large attack in the direction of Terny and suffered heavy losses before retreating. Between Kremenna and Terny, a Russian Tos-1A-Sonsepok multiple launch rocket system, MLRS, trying to move into its firing position under the cover of darkness, was destroyed. In the Siversky of Luhansk Oblast, Russian forces continued their attacks east and southeast of Bilohorivka with no change in the situation. Moving to the Donbas, starting in northeast Donetsk Oblast. In the Siversky of Donetsk Oblast, Russian forces attempted to advance into Spirne, suffered losses and retreated. Mutual fighting was reported between Berestovo and Vyimka, where Ukrainian forces had to retreat. Geolocated video showed Russian forces occupying new positions, advancing up to 1,000 meters. Russian forces have reached the point of their furthest advances established in July 2022, and the war map was adjusted. In the Bakhmut-Ayo, Russian sources claimed that fighting continued near Bogdanivka, with no major change to the situation. Russian forces made a significant advance in Ivanivske, reaching the southwestern edge of the settlement. A Russian tank was able to freely operate, firing on Ukrainian positions at point-blank range. Russian sources reported fighting continued within the settlement. Russian troops also continued to push on the T-506 highway in the direction of Chasiv Yar. The head of the Chasiv Yar City Military Administration, Sergei Chaus, said that there were still 875 civilians in the Hromada, primarily pensioners. Quote, "To say they don't know where to go is not entirely accurate. They don't understand where in society they would fit afterward. Here, they are at home. Yes, there is constant danger. Yes, there are constant attacks. Yes, there is a lack of electricity, water and gas. But they are at home." Unquote. Despite the Russian advances, there are growing complaints among Russian units about high casualties, no evacuation for the wounded, and a lack of supplies. Russian commanders continue to use blocking troops to force formations forward. In the Klishivka-AO, fighting restarted in the areas of Klishivka and Andriivka, with no change in the situation. With Ukraine holding the plateau west of Klishivka, any Russian advance on the T-504 highway to Chasiv Yar is going to be complicated by Ukrainian forces holding the control from three directions, including the heights at Stupochka. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, Russian forces continued their intense attacks in the Avdiivka-AO and made new advances despite heavy losses. In Berdychi, intense fighting continued within the village. Geolocated video showed that Russian light infantry had reached the western edge of Berdychi, but couldn't consolidate their gains. Ukrainian forces struck the chemical storage tanks at the Russian-occupied Avdiivka coke plant, sparking a large fire. Fighting continued east of Semenivka and Umanske, and west of Tonenke. Armut claimed there was fighting in the area of Vodyane, and Russian and Ukrainian sources reported fighting continued in the administrative borders of Pervomayske. Based on the three independent reports, Ukrainian forces have clearly pushed Russian troops back, but there has not been any visual proof preventing our ability to adjust the map. Fighting also continued in the area of Nevelske, with no change in the situation. Ukrainian military analyst Oleksandr Kovalenko believes that Russian forces are exhausting their combat potential. Quote, it seemed that Russia would take an operational pause and deal with the restoration of the combat capability of units that had suffered colossal losses. But instead, it continued to advance, squeezing the remaining potential from the troops and even introducing reserves. Moving to assessment, we don't see how Russia can absorb the continued losses, particularly in the last 5 to 7 days, and launch a larger offensive in another 30 to 60 days. Heavy fighting continued in the Vuhledar AO. Russian forces attacked Novomikhailivka from the north and south, trying to squeeze the Ukrainian garrison out without success. Russian forces also continued to push in the Staromlinivka AO, attacking Urozhaine from the south with no change in the situation. We haven't talked about the situation in Kherson Oblast in a while, where fighting has been less intense, and the artillery barrages on the city of Kherson are somewhat diminished. Comparatively, of course, as they are still dense. Geolocated video showed that Ukrainian forces had retaken the west-central part of Krynki near the fishing camp. The map was adjusted. The General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, GSAFU, reported that Russian troops launched 4 attacks on the left bank of the Kherson region and changed their tactics. Squad-sized light infantry units are executing more frequent attacks. GSAFU specified in their morning report that none of the attacks were in Krynki, without releasing additional information. Ukrainian forces continue to occupy Dachi by the Antonivsky Bridge and most of the islands between the Konka and Dnipro rivers. Here's what is happening in the Black Sea, occupied Crimea, Mykolaiv and Odessa oblasts. The spokesperson for Operational Command South, Captain Natalia Humanyuk, reported that the Black Sea Fleet had already reloaded with Kalibr cruise missiles at the new installation in Novorossiysk and could bring up to 50 cruise missiles into firing position. New high-resolution satellite images confirm that the Project 18-280 signal intelligence ship Ivan Khurs and the Project 775 large landing ship LLS Azov are at the Kilen Bukhta repair facility in occupied Sevastopol. The status of the LLS Yamal was less clear, with the vessel moored at dock PD-88. Here is my theater-wide update. Between April the 2nd and the early morning of April the 4th, Russia launched 24 Shahed 136 one-way drones, with 15 shot down. The Ministry of Defense of Ukraine created the Central Department for the Protection of the Rights of Servicemen as part of required reforms for NATO accession and to address ongoing criticism within the ranks. The new department will provide support about the provisioning of soldiers, questions about leave, prevention of abuse by commanders and soldiers' rights, adequate medical care for the wounded, and gender equality. The first 25 Ukrainian conscripts were demobilized after changes in the law. Among the 25, 11 had volunteered to fight and served in the Bakhmut AO. Another one was a former POW who was captured during the opening days of the expanded war. All conscripts whose contracts have expired but were barred from ending their military service due to martial law will be released by early May. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky refused to comment on questions about whether mobilization would be accelerated or how many people could be pulled into the ranks of the armed forces. During a press conference, he said that Russia was planning to mobilize 300,000 new troops by June the 1st. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov denied the claim, calling it untrue. The Wall Street Journal reported that in February, President of France Emmanuel Macron secretly met with United States President Joe Biden and German Chancellor Olaf Scholz to try and change Western attitudes to the war in Ukraine. Macron argued that the West and Ukraine would be better served by a, quote, strategically ambiguous position toward Russia that would leave all military options on the table. This is contrary to the policy from Washington and Berlin of avoiding provocation out of concern that Russia could use tactical nuclear weapons. France lobbied for a non-combat deployment of troops that would provide military training and clearing mines in areas well away from the line of conflict. Biden and Scholz rejected both ideas, while Macron has stayed the course. The same story reported that an internal Kremlin document called for a disinformation campaign targeting France and Macron, suggesting they would drag the West into a nuclear confrontation with the Russian Federation. Lithuania is prepared to donate equipment to help restore Ukrainian power plants. A group of experts from Ukraine will meet with their Lithuanian counterparts to discuss what is available and what can be used to accelerate restoring electrical power. Austria has allocated $2.2 million for humanitarian aid to Ukraine, and Latvia earmarked $5.8 million. Another $4.7 million will be provided for military equipment. Finland and Ukraine signed a mutual security agreement. The two countries agreed to long-term military and financial assistance, and Finland will help Ukraine rebuild its energy infrastructure, assess environmental damage, and strengthen border security. Finland also announced its 23rd military aid package to Ukraine, providing $204 million in artillery rounds and air defense systems. In an interview, the Republican chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Congressman Mike McCaul, called out U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan as too timid. Quote, Blinken seems very, I was with him right after the invasion. He was all in for MiGs going in. It's not him. In my judgment, it's Jake Sullivan and the White House. It's a very timid response. I liked the Colin Powell doctrine. You're all in or you're all out. Don't go halfway. You know, we're giving Putin exactly what he wants. That's a stalemate, a war of attrition. Jake is, he's overly cautious, he's very timid. And he's bought into this notion that, well, if we give them too much, then Russia's going to use a tactical nuke on us. Well, most intelligence I've seen is they're not going to do that, because it would be a game changer for everybody. Unquote. You want our opinion? The US team said that, in their opinion, no lies were detected. No one on the team is a fan of Jake Sullivan and his policies. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre told reporters that the House shouldn't be attempting to create its own military aid package for Ukraine. Quote, House Republicans should pass the bipartisan national security agreement that already passed with overwhelming support out of the Senate, 70-29. There is a way to get Ukraine what they need. All the speaker has to do is put that national security supplemental on the floor. Unquote. It's time to hide your favorite coffee mug. I'll wait. For my last story, House Republicans reported that Speaker Mike Johnson would not put any bills for military aid for Ukraine on the floor during the week of April the 9th, and a new bill might not be presented until the end of April. In our assessment, it is highly unlikely any military aid will be put to a vote unless Discharge Petition 9 gets 27 more signatures or there is an unforeseen change in House leadership. And that's what we know. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.